six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome back to the Real Bourbon Bros podcast, the essential podcast for the novice yet curious whiskey enthusiast. Giddy up. Welcome back, everybody, to the Real Bourbon Bros podcast. Tonight, we'll bring you, or today, whenever you're listening to this episode, exclusively our part two interview with Jody and Bernie from the Evan Williams Experience, again, part of Heaven Hill. We are, again, reviewing, in the midst of reviewing, three different Heaven Hill products. And tonight, or in today's episode, we'll wrap up discussing the final product, Square Six, as well as chit-chatting about a lot of other stuff in the industry. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we do. And again, check out part one of our interview with Bernie and Jody from Evan Williams Experience if you have not done so already. Enjoy.
Oh, yeah, those are both good starters. That brings us, I guess, to the Square Six.
The Square Six. Yeah, so yeah. Square Six. I'll let Jody take
over. I don't know a lot about the Square Six. This is all new to us.
All right, Jody's so the Square Six was actually made here. 2013 November. I was here that
night.
Took a bath and mash that night because one of the lines were stopped up. We had to clean it up so we could still go.
It took forever that night.
Oh, my God.
Like 11 o'clock, Parker and you and everybody down there. I got impatient. I left a couple times.
But anyway, so this is our Square Six. We did bourbon. So here at the Bourbon Experience, we actually do everything on pot stills. Mm-hmm. So it's a pot still run. We actually do everything by hand. We do everything. We do batch distilling. Here, we know we do one batch at a time, one barrel at a time, one barrel a day. So everything from the mashing of the grain to measuring out the mash bills. So all that's done by hand. So it's truly a handcrafted product. We run our stills by hand, so it's like I say, it's truly a handcrafted product. So this is our third release. We got together in the back one afternoon. We were just sitting there talking. They said, let's do something different. So we decided we were going to make a wheated bourbon. So we made two wheated bourbons. So the first mash bill that we did was 74% corn, 16% wheat, and 10% malted barley.
High corn.
Higher on the corn. And then we thought, well, heck, we ran a few barrels of that. And he said, let's make another mash bill. So we did a 20% wheat.
Is no one supervising you?
Hey, one great thing about here, the Superior family, gives us the leeway to do experimentation.
That's awesome.
Oh, of course.
And that makes it fun.
That's awesome.
You got to learn.
So here we've probably done about a dozen different mash bills.
Nice.
And different, we've done two different kind of bourbons. We did our regular bourbon. We did a high rye bourbon.
Yeah, high rye.
We did three different kind of wheats. Three different kind of ryes. We did a 53, 63, and a 70% rye. We had two different wheated bourbons. We've done some flavored malts. We've done a single malt. We've done a 95% rye malt whiskey, which is just it's fun.
Single malt.
The single malt. It was interesting to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, so once we made these, and we thought, well, let's figure out how we're going to present this.
Yeah.
So we kind of tinkered with it a little bit and messed with it, and we came up with these two mash bills. We decided to blend them together. So after we tasted both of them are good. We thought, well, let's blend them together. And so we settled on a 60-40 blend of these two mash bills. We tried everything from 80-20, 70-30, and we settled on 60-40.
So Jody and I both sit with our other distiller, Conor O'Driscoll, and other folks on this innovation panel. Yeah. So that's what we're doing.
Sure,
is dialing in the proofs and that kind of
thing. Yeah, balancing it.
Tweaking it a little bit here, a little bit there. But something that we found out that most of our other two releases were at 95 proof, our high rye bourbon and our high rye rye.
Okay.
That were at 95 proof. But when we tasted this at 95, it was just a little thin. We thought, well, let's bump the proof points up to 10 more points.
Nice.
So this is 105, and made all the difference in the world. But when you taste this, you're going to get two really distinct taste profiles. So if you get a...
Tell us what it is. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to say it. So
you did a 60-40 split, so you did the math and all that. So what's the mash bill corn...
Yeah. We actually put it on the bottom. Meat. So we want
okay.
to.
So you have it there.
We want to. We're pretty transparent on our mash bills. So you can see we did a 60-40 split of those two. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so we actually put it on the label.
Oh, okay. So this is. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Okay, I see it.
Yeah.
74, 16, 10, yeah. and 68, 20, 12.
Oh, right, exactly.
Got it.
Way back when. It's
clear in the throat and talking a lot.
Turned out really well. But when you taste that, go ahead and kind of nose it.
Nice,
and,
nice, yeah.
Now, this is on pot still, so you're going to get a different 18, nose. You're
going to
get
wheat.
More of a...
Yeah.
A different nose and a different
18%
flavor.
18% wheat.
That's a lot more copper touch in this whiskey, too.
Well, that's why I split, you know, I did the average,
gotcha,
right?
Gotcha.
So I did the math.
The average. Gotcha. Yeah, but then it's 60-40.
No, that is 60-40
okay,
right there.
Okay, I gotcha.
So you did that in your head?
Well, no. Well, then, that's no, nice. That's 50,
it's a little bit more than that.
I'm a 2.6 cumulative.
That's a 50-50.
I'm not
so
good at
So it's
math.
Probably more like 17.
Right. I think this is the top one.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry.
40,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Top
so
one's
60.
Yeah. Okay, so it's
so
a little less
a
than
more.
18. It's like 17 then. It's a top 160?
Yeah, now it's like 16%, so it'd be
yeah.
more. The bottom one's 20. That's 40. You're the computer engineer, dude.
No, I was just asking
I'm
about
just
it. But you have the mesh bills on there. So that's,
yes,
that's
right,
awesome. Yes,
yeah.
I mean,
we're trying to be transparent with that.
Yeah,
you know,
because I like that.
Awesome. I like that. I like that. I think a lot of
why exactly?
You know, it's people are trying to copy.
No, man. Hey, rising waters floats all ships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, go for it.
You want to tell where Square Six came?
I am. Yes.
That was Mike. Well, sorry.
Sorry.
We stole your thing.
Take two.
But the
interesting question.
Yeah. We always put that on the side, too. So back in 1783, M. Williams was the first licensed distiller in the state of Kentucky. Okay, so the city of Louisville deeded him a plot of land. There was a six-block area down here on the river.
Okay.
So on the actual plot back in 1783, it was called Square Six. So we're actually on part of that plot of
so we, there was a square one, a square two, a square
all
three,
right.
square
yeah, so,
eight.
So we're
all
on that
six.
Yeah.
Square six.
Well, so that's how we got the name. So we're actually on part of that land.
Okay.
So I thought that was a great throwback.
And Evan Williams, a lot of people give us a little hell sometimes because, oh, he can't be the first one. No, he wasn't the first distiller in Kentucky. No. He was the first licensed. So, you know, he was the first one to pay taxes. And actually,
who was the first
licensed? Don't know.
Ooh.
Some farmer, you know, it was in the 1700s.
Tisa,
no, I'm smelling
yeah,
it.
I got the nose. Yeah, yeah. I've been.
We were part of Virginia until 1792.
I can smell a lot of corn on here.
And it was legal for every farmer to have a 50-gallon or less pot still.
Right.
So
yeah.
You know, lots of people were, but they weren't commercially making it, and he was. So
and
there
still
you
not
go.
Around today, anyway. So
well,
this is
know,
still around.
You know, so we, you know, sometimes there's smoke and mirrors with stuff, but that's a real truth. We have a copy of his distiller's license and everything. Mm. So you get that different. Pot still flavor, right?
Definitely.
You got that. I mean, it's not a flavor, but it's a influence.
I think feel the nose on the front palate. I get that.
Definitely tell it's
the
wheat.
Caramels on this. It's really nice.
It is. One thing that I've
on the finish, I get a little more of the corn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm gonna tell you the things that I get on this. All right, so on the front part,
yeah,
I get confectionery sugar.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
almost like a white powdered sugar, confectionery sugar.
Yeah.
Then on the finish.
They call that different in Miami.
They call it different. But on the finish, I get red hots. Cinnamon.
Red hots.
Yeah. Yep. Red hots. It tastes definitely some cinnamon on the back
the
end. Yeah.
Yeah.
But one thing I like about this, too, it's got a little bit of dryness to it. Some of the tannins come through.
Yeah.
A little bit dry. And it lingers.
I think the high proof helps with that.
I do too.
Yeah. I think that's a good proof point. 105, like 100 to what?
It's unusual.
115.
Usually don't see.
Very good.
You see 101, 103, 107. What happened to 105? Well, now we got it.
Now we got it.
Oh, 105. I like that number.
Prime number.
I asked Jimmy Russell one time. I said, why is it 101, 103, 107? How come it's not 102, 104, 106? You know what he told me? He goes, son, I don't know everything.
That sounds like Jimmy.
That's just what the math turns out to be. That's what, you know.
Yeah,
what
numbers.
He knows a lot, but he doesn't know everything.
He's a mathematician.
They just put the specific gravity in there, and that's what it turned out to be, right?
Oh, boy. That was the engineer.
That's what they do, man. That's what their numbers come from, man.
Well, back in the day, just to let y'all know, because Jimmy taught me that day, the original entry proof for most people's bourbon was 107.
Okay.
Because until 1963... It was the most you could put it into the barrel was 110 proof. Today you can do it at 125.
Right.
Yeah. So in 1963, it was changed to 125.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
You get more bottles out of it then, right? You get more things. Mm-hmm. But until then, it was 110. So most people, because the hydrometers, you know, weren't in computers, weren't around.
Right.
They wanted to make sure they didn't find for getting it over, sure. So they put it just under at 107. So our original entry proof and a lot of people's original entry proof is 107.
That's interesting.
So Jimmy said once it starts aging, it's hard to get it up to, you know, it's going to go down in proof and lower force, higher proof. Yeah, so 101, 103, and 107 were basically barrel proofs back in the
then.
Day.
Now they're like
103. And that's when I asked him, what about 102, 104, 106? Yeah. He says, son, I don't know everything.
Okay.
So, you know.
But you don't think that's hilarious. We didn't put it in at 125. You wouldn't have the Elijah Craig barrel proofs now at 30s.
The hazmat. Everybody says, "Oh, you should put it in 107." Well, what do you know? You know, you won't ever get that again. And so, you know, so it's a give and take.
Yeah, those Elijah Craig barrel proofs are some of my favorite, especially some of the store picks.
C923
was really good, Jody.
It is good. I'm really happy with this.
Yeah, I like this though. But yeah, the C923
is so different.
And I love Pastille whiskey. Just trying, you know. Because you get the whole spectrum of taste profile. Everything from the floral notes on the high part of the run to the vegetal notes on the low part of the run.
Right.
But you get the whole
spectrum. There's a variety.
It is.
Because some like Japanese whiskey to me is very, it's a one-trick pony to me.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on what you get, obviously, but it's like those vanilla floral notes. Like you can like stamp
floral,
that.
Yeah,
it's just like, that's all you get.
So that's what they're putting in.
Well, again, you know, and they're 100% malt.
Right.
So they're not, they don't have
more
different recipes. That's 100% malt too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a variety of grain. They're not using wheat and rye and corn.
Yeah. There's more.
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's their tradition.
But if you don't like that profile, then you're kind of searching. That's why I like the bourbon and American whiskeys in general. It's more of a. There's more
than the. And they don't use a brand new barrel either.
I think I've had.
Right.
I think it's as strong as wheated whiskey.
But
as far as the flavor profile is.
Mm-hmm. But I like my wheated bourbons with a little bit more proof. That's why I like the old fences, the bottle and bottle.
The old bottle and bottle.
And I like it a little bit more higher in proof, a little bit more age. Because, you know, wheat, you know, can tend to be a little bit thinner.
Yep.
But I'd like them a little bit higher proof, a little bit more age.
Yeah.
So
it gets a little.
It gets a little bit more complexity to it.
Well, our Larceny barrel proofs, kick.
I think the
524 actually kicked Elijah's 524.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. B524.
Really?
Joey's right.
When you
take the water, you know,
do
it higher, it really shines, you know.
Yeah. Maybe I had that. I did have that.
You know, there's only.
I can't remember.
Here's a cool thing. So, name the wheat bourbons on the market today.
Well, you got your Wellers and Buffalo Traces and
Buffalo Trace is not wheat.
Weller
is. Pappy Van Winkle is.
Maker's
Mark. Makers. Our Larceny and Old Fitzgerald.
Larceny, I was thinking. Yeah,
Old Fitz. Then we're starting to struggle. Okay, so we got our Bernheim wheat whiskey, which is a wheat whiskey, but you got to throw it in there.
Yep.
Then you got Wilderness Trail.
Yep.
You've got Old Elk. We're running out. I'm at 9. You know, there's 10,000 labels of American whiskey.
Yeah.
There's 9.
Yeah.
Where are they? Square 6.
Square 6.
Square 6.
Well,
but that's not fair. So why is that?
Is it a unique profile?
But why are there so few?
I think more, it's my opinion, is a lot more drinkers like the aggressiveness of the rye.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so they're going to do a high rye bourbon over a wheated bourbon because it's less.
I think
it's definitely that. But sweet. Why? But why? Why or, is there so few?
Is it to do with the production or?
I have a theory.
Okay.
I don't know if it's right or not.
Yeah.
But
it's like the Kennedy,
I have
Kennedy
a theory.
Theory.
And I wrote a book, damn it, so I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
It's in that book.
Hold on, which page?
Well, I forget what page it is. That's a new edition, so I'm just going to new. But
edited.
I got to find it real quick.
So if you're making whiskey 150 years ago, corn's a big deal here. So we have a lot of corn grows around here. Mm-hmm. That's why this is the most. That's why we're making bourbon whiskey because up north, rye is the most prevalent grain.
Yeah, rye.
You have a shorter growing season for corn up north.
Mm-hmm.
We have early corn and late corn. They have corn. Yeah. So they have one season for corn. We have two different, you know, not two different seasons, but we have early corn and late corn. You have to let the grains dry out, Jody, right?
Right.
Because
certain moisture content.
Yeah, so you can't grind up wet grain.
Too soon, yeah.
So you have to put it in a bin, let it dry out, in the silos, let it dry out. So our last harvest of corn in this area is Halloween. So you got to dry it out at least 2 months, right? When we do our grain to glass, we harvest it then, and we do a, we mash it in December, so it's about 2 months. So back 150 years ago, you're making whiskey all year round. You know, you're making beer first, right? Because that's kind of why they were doing it, to make the get water that you can drink, and you didn't trust the stream, the lake water, and then that. So you're still making whiskey in February, March, April, May, June, July, August. So you haven't got the new harvest of corn yet, and you haven't dried it out for 2 months. So where are you going to get the starch you need for making beer and whiskey? You're going to get it from the winter grain of wheat in Kentucky. That's wheat. My theory.
Fix the wheat.
So it's more of a supplement to the corn. And then when they got back to corn, boom, they started using the corn in the Rioneka. So I think that's where it came from. Now, that's just a theory, but I published it in my book. So, damn it, I was like, you know, I planted the flag.
Yeah, that's right.
But until somebody, you know, what? But what else can, I mean, it's kind of a good discussion for you all listening to this.
Yeah.
You all, how come there's only 10 or 12 of something out of 10,000?
All right.
There's got to be a reason, and that's what I started asking myself 5-6 years ago. Why is there such so little of these?
And all those wheated are good brands, too, and they're all good pours. Like, I think they're popular. Brands. Yeah, exactly. So it's not like...
But they're not, you know, Maker's is the largest selling brand of all those, and they're not the number one selling bourbon in the world or whiskey in the world. So, you know, that was my question, and nobody had an answer for it, so I had to...
Put it
I
out
had
there.
To, God, to do it, ask. And even Mason Dixon had to draw the line somewhere. You got to make a decision, and you got to...
Stick with it.
Yeah. Maybe one of our listeners will have an opinion.
That's a good, very good thought.
Well, I'm not saying I'm right. You know,
you just put it out there.
But you all should think about it and wonder why.
Critical thinking. Right? Yeah, critical thinking.
I think since I wrote it down, it's probably right.
Yeah. I like it. No,
well, it took years to decide.
Back to the production and the way that the seasons came and what was available, and I think you're onto something there. So
it's all about availability.
And then, then we get into like the rise and the different genres and the different families of rye out there. You know, and you know, you get into particular. We're not that. We don't go that deep. Mm-hmm. You know, where we're looking at different strains of different rye and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but.
Mammoth in front of Michigan.
Mammoth, yeah, they got the northern rye and the rye experiment that they did. Well,
Jody's got a high rye rye.
Yeah.
So, with his accent, but, I mean, high rye rye.
But, you know, we think about it. You had Maryland rye.
Yep.
You had Pennsylvania rye.
Yep.
And that was basically the two ryes that you had.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, so how does that play into what you're doing?
And some people call the Pennsylvania rye the Monongahela rye.
Yeah.
Mm. What was that one out of from Mammoth Rye? What was that?
Well, they did a rye experiment. I forgot what was their rye
it was on,
called.
It was on an island specifically in Lake Michigan. They planted
Michigan State had a collaboration with Mammoth Rye, and they planted a whole field of this rye on one of the South Manitou Island.
Makes sense because rye thrives in a very cool
climate.
Humid climate in a temperate climate.
And you know, you have from Michigan, you have other distilleries like Iron Fish and all that, growing rye up in the upper peninsula of Michigan and so forth, and growing their corn and their barley down in the lower peninsula. And that's, you know, that's what they're sourcing it from. But they had this, the rye experiment, I forgot what it was called, but it was a specific strain of rye that they found, you know, way back in the 1800s, and they decided they had some, and they could actually ferment rosin rye, the rosin rye experiment,
South Manitou Island.
So That was interesting, you know, because we talked to some of these other people, and they're like, oh, you know, everyone's worried about the mash bill and all that. Well, I don't want to worry about the mash bill, right. But I want to worry about what strain of rye you guys
use. Right. Okay. That's what we got out of that
interview. And
heirloom? Is that what they're talking about? Heirloom. The different strains?
Yeah, the different strains, yeah. and you know, because right. They have different taste profiles.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. House.
Yeah. Yeah. Our new grain to glass is using that with an heirloom corn, so I get it. Yeah,
Yeah.
And they're starting to do, here in Kentucky, started doing some rye just in Kentucky. Nice. Kentucky rye.
Growing rye.
And the weather obviously is going to influence the taste of that rye.
Right. Yeah. So that's going to be something really interesting to tie in.
We're very humid here, so it's going to be a...
Not humid up there.
Rye is a grass. It grows anywhere. Grass is the most prolific plant on planet Earth.
The world, yeah.
So, but it doesn't thrive here. It grows here, but it doesn't thrive here.
I'm getting a different kick to this now.
Kick to it?
Yeah.
It's starting to... Yeah, it's good.
105 proof.
Yeah. Settling in. It's good weeded.
The missing 105 proof, right? It was 103, 101, 107. Mm-hmm. You got the missing.
Yeah, the 105.
This is the Square 6, 105 proof, and this is available here.
At the Bourbon Experience.
Square 6 is only available at the
Scotch. What's the price point on the Square 6?
Good question. What's the price point on this, Jody?
$79.99.
Okay.
Oh, that's pretty good.
For a listener.
It's not bad. But yeah, come visit and get a bottle.
Very few barrels of that. It's not like we have 10,000 barrels of that, you know?
Okay.
Jody makes one barrel a day.
And this is your third release.
We think he's slacking.
Yes, that's our third release.
He's making more, right?
What do you do all day,
Jody?
Is it just the same mash bill?
We've had three different varieties.
That's the third variety that we released.
Guys.
And you didn't mention earlier about the different, so you're experimenting with different mash bills.
Yes.
What did you do with those other barrels?
So they're aging.
They're at Jody's house.
You did it in Mary.
We'll bring out different releases ever so often. So right now we're experimenting with or tasting maybe some of our flavored malts. And then, you know, down the road, we might release those.
Okay.
Or, we've actually tasting some 7-year-old bourbon that we made.
Nice.
And we actually tried that morning. it's really good.
Ask it for a friend.
So down the road, we'll have different releases of different products or different mash bills.
Yeah.
So that's fun to do.
Yeah. I love they have that freedom.
Yeah.
That's interesting to us because, like, coming from, you know, a place that's more corporate, like distilleries that are more corporate, it's like, this is what we got to do. But having that freedom, it definitely lets you express and try new things. That way, I think, find the best product.
Right. Exactly. Right? But like just to come up with something completely off the wall new to try is cool.
Original.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that makes it fun to do that. Yeah. So I kid you not, I'm having a good time.
It's like a great job.
It's a fun job.
You started to now, like what you're doing. It's
a good gig. I'm not gonna lie.
You're not gonna return anytime soon.
Still feel pretty good.
Yeah,
it's fun. Thoroughly enjoy it.
No, we appreciate it. Appreciate the time. Appreciate the pours. It was a great experience trying all these and getting all the stories. And we really appreciate it. I mean, from our
theories.
Well, the theories on
theories written down in a published book.
but it's good times.
Super.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about or want to know anything about?
Oh, gosh. What's the meaning of life? No. Well, the question we always ask everybody, all our guests on our podcast that we do have, is for the novice whiskey enthusiast who's just starting out, like, it's their virgin experience. They maybe have tried a few different mixed drinks with bourbon or whiskey in it. But they're interested in starting maybe a neat... the neat trail, right? Going down that, just trying the profile of the bourbon or the whiskey. Where do you think they should start? Where should be their origin in terms of that experience?
And based on personal experiences or stuff that you would normally tell people?
So I always tell people, if you're starting out drinking bourbon, try larceny. Because it's,
a weeder. Yeah.
It's, 20% weed. Yeah. It's not going to burn your taste buds out. You're going to taste that. You're going to get some of the vanilla, some of the caramels. And when you taste that, it's a great thing to start with. And you can sip on it. It's not going to overpower you. And then from that one, you build on other products. I think it's a great one to start with.
Yeah. RC small batch.
Yeah.
Yep.
So my thing is to not worry about tasting notes.
Mm-hmm.
So I started at Jim Beam in 2005 when there was only 10 distilleries in Kentucky. Now there's 100. There was two distilleries outside of Kentucky. Now there's 2,600, wow. Right? But back then, I learned from Fred Noe there. And then when I came over here, I worked with Parker Beam and Craig Beam and everybody over here with all their experience, which is vast. And they don't talk in those terms. Tawny, our sensory, she puts all of our small batch and single barrels together and profiles. She doesn't talk in those terms. So Parker used to say, you know, I remember people coming up at Whiskey Fest and go, hey, I get a little green apple in this, Parker, or I get, you know, yeah. I get more caramel in this, or I get a little banana. He goes, I didn't put any of that in there. He goes, I just taste good bourbon. So like Tawny says, as long as there's not negative things in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm always intimidated when I first started, and still can be, when we do our innovation tasting, you know, and it's intimidating to sit around people and go, what notes do you get? What do you get? What do you get on your nose? What do you get? What do you get? What do you get?
Right?
And they're like, you know, so take that off the table. And first of all, you get the sweetness from the corn and the barley. And then Parker always said you got a little biscuity quality. They got a little tactile feel. You got a feel from the biscuity quality from the barley. But they're both sweet. Rye has the spice. And wheat is like the vodka of grains. It doesn't really have a flavor. It lets the other flavor shine through. So a wheated bourbon is going to let the sweetness of the corn and barley shine through. That's why it's not spicy. Right? So you get the spiciness or the sweetness from the grains. From the barrel, you're getting, number one, vanilla. Then you get honey and caramel. Mm. Other than that, you're not tasting anything else. So when somebody says, I get green apple, or I get baking spice, which I've never understood baking spice on spice. I mean, there's a lot of spices. Right? I went, how's baking spice?
How do you differentiate?
And there's nutmeg, and then there's this, and there's that. Jody's parents are different parents than mine that I know of, right? they had different meals. They went to different school. I went to a different school than you did.
Right.
So my lunches were different. The holiday meals were different. I sharpened pencils when I was a kid, and you chewed on your, you know, you got bored in class, and you chewed on erasers, you chewed on shit. We all have different things in our own set of experiences. Anything else you taste other than the vanilla, honey, and caramel, and sweet or spicy, is your experience. So if you taste something and I don't taste it, I shouldn't feel bad,
right?
Because you're actually tasting it,
and
I'm not tasting it because I don't have that experience.
Right.
I didn't taste. I didn't eat that food or do that stuff. So that's, take that off your shoulders, and don't care what other people taste, but just enjoy. You know, there's things you should. The most important things you should learn is what shouldn't be there.
Right. So that's kind of my thing, because I'm the world's worst at trying to tell you what's in something.
Right.
Because I'm looking for things that are not supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Not for what's there.
Right, exactly. I'm looking for things that are off notes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's
dirty socks or acetone.
That's completely different than what somebody's looking at when they're tasting a bourbon. So, you know, it's a whole different way than what I'm looking at.
Yeah. I don't get a lot of these reviews, and I agree with you, because I had a conversation with Gary just recently about, you know, it's like, I don't get, like, how people can, if I taste something, if I put it to my mouth and I come back and I was like, rattle off like 10 different notes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, where am I getting those notes? It's like,
making it up.
I can be right.
A flavor wheel. They're getting it from a flavor wheel.
I
can be
right.
I guarantee you
they're getting it from
a flavor. But you know, the number one thing to think about, do you like it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you enjoy it?
Yep.
Is it, you know, you like what you like?
You don't go that in depth with all the flavor notes. Do you like it or do you
exactly.
not like it?
Do you like it or not?
And then is it worth the price of the bottle?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to,
Do you want to spend your hard-earned money
for
that bottle?
That's all that matters.
If you like it and you want to spend the money for it.
Yeah. Don't read all these reviews and say, oh,
this is why do I care what this? You think about it?
Yeah.
Exactly. First of all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing against you all, but
yeah,
you know, Jody and Connor and I and Susan, we don't say, how do you like it? We go, well, you do talk about it, but it doesn't matter if you do I like it?
Yeah.
Right. And you don't like it?
Yeah.
Well, Tawny said that, right? She goes, well, this is not for me. I mean, anything in there is not supposed to be there? No.
Right.
Then somebody's going to like it. Yeah. So put it out.
Falls within.
Yeah, obviously you have to have a panel to agree when you release something.
Yes.
To have a consensus.
Mutual. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the proper way to do it. Not to say, well, I didn't taste vanilla. Well, I didn't taste
shoe
leather.
Do you like it or don't you?
No.
Well, the cell won't. Yeah.
But it's a consensus on this is a good bourbon to represent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good way to wrap it up.
There you go.
All right. Thanks again.
Fighting cock.
That's one of ours. That's one of ours. Like
it. Yeah. Where did that come from?
I'm saying it's a
kicking chicken,
my,
baby.
That's my best price per quality pour.
Quitting cock.
Yes.
Quitting cock and wild turkey, both from Lawrenceburg, Kentucky.
Oh, you bet.
Both kicking chickens, too.
I had to say that. That's my number one.
There you go.
All right, Steve. Well, you and your fighting
cock. Well, this is a close one, too. Price per quality pour, buddy.
That's
there
right.
You go. All right. Wrap it up, Gary.
I wrap it up?
You wrap it up.
Well, again, everybody, thanks again for joining us today on the Real Bourbon Bros podcast. We're lucky enough to be joined by Bernie and Jody from Heaven Hill, our Evan Williams experience here in Louisville. Again, if you're in the area, please come and visit the experience, the Evan Williams experience. A lot of pours here, a lot of great bottles for you guys to buy. We definitely recommend the Yellow Corn. Mellow corn. Yeah. Evan Williams.
Not white corn.
Yeah, the corn. Evan Williams.